The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Wednesday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing good. We got so much to talk about. By the way, one of my favorite tweets yesterday was Conan O'Brien. Thanking the news media for using Omarosa's full name as not to mistake her for any other Omarosa.
I don't know of another
Omarosa. Neither do I. I don't know of any other Omarosa. Well, we'll get to that coming up here. The leader of the DNC, one of the second in charge, being taken to task by more liberal groups because of the assault allegations. Some of the primary results last night, we'll get to that. Manafort's defense rests. Democrats bringing back climate change. And by the way, I think this is really interesting as now we get into, we're into August, which means we're into the midterm election season.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it interesting that what is brought back, what are the Democrats trying to focus on right now? They're bringing back climate change and the racism charge on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
The things that they're most comfortable with talking about. And we spent a long time during the Obama administration discussing this and discussing the fact that Democrats in power, when they were in power, discussed two things primarily, race and climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And when the polls would come out, every time the polls would come out, we would look at it and we would see at the bottom of the polls what Americans are really concerned with. I remember the number of the polls that had like the top 28 problems. There was one that came out where the what America thinks is the top problems, and there were 36 categories. Climate change didn't even appear on it. Mm-hmm. But in the ones taken during the Obama administration, climate change and race were always at the bottom. Americans themselves, when asked the question, were not prodded in any way. When you just ask, what are the problems? Race and climate change are never listed as any top concern whatsoever. And you and I came to the conclusion that, you know, maybe the Democrats have a philosophy. Let's seem extremely concerned and frightened over issues that America really doesn't care about. And if we do, well, it can't hurt us. Might not be able to help us, but it can't hurt us. But people will see that at least we're concerned. But I've always wondered why they take the things that Americans aren't concerned about and put them on the top. You know, at the front of the plate.
Well, because I think it is the way to sidestep talking the real issues. Focus on something where no one else really is focused. It's almost like writing your own fantasy. And you get to appear as if you care. You get to you get to build an image of a caring person, and it's the ultimate argument. The planet is dying. We all have to, and the numbers change. They vary depending on who you're talking to, but the stern warning is there. It's all going to happen by 2030. It's all going to happen in the next 100 years, whatever, you know, person that's making the argument. They throw out a different number every time, but it's this ultimate argument. The earth is going to end, and we're killing it. We're responsible for it. And so it's the equivalent of walking around, you know, screaming the sky is falling. It's not, but you can't prove it's not, so we're going to stick with it.
I find it interesting that after it hasn't worked, that they still go back to it, and the only reason that because if you... What's the old saying? That the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and over again and expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we know that they've thought about it, because think about it. And the thing is, I think we live in, and maybe it's because of social media, but I think that, and this is just my opinion, that As never before, right now in this time in history, we live in the present, and it's the present of the social media, the immediacy of it, and the passion and the emotion of the immediacy of it. And so we tend to stick in the moment of the day, and I think social media is, you know, one of the reasons of it. But you and I think it's very important to have a memory and go back and actually look at the reality of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we, you know, so when we look back, when you take yourself out of the present and you look back and you realize the passion that was set on the issues of racism and climate change when people really didn't care about it, I find it interesting that Democrats don't realize, because this was after 2016, when they realized the error of their ways, and we need to start talking about, remember, after Trump won, we need to start talking about not identity politics, but the things that America cares about. And we need to go to the heartland. And you and I remember this very, very well. It's stuck in our brain because, again, you had a major political party saying everything that we did was wrong and we need to change and we need to focus on the concerns of the American people. And what do they do? By the time we get to the next midterm, exactly back to what they said has failed them before.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Maduro. Basically, you know, throwing socialism all together, real socialism, kids, under the bus. Anyone believe for a moment they're going to get away from socialism? No. No, they can't. You can't change the nature of what's going on with the left in this country either. You can't roll that back. You've created generations that, again, are looking for an oppressor every day for a different reason. I'm a victim, and they're going to list the reasons that they're a victim. And it doesn't matter who you are, even if you're on their side. At some point, you're going to become one of their oppressors. That's the way it works. And that's the mindset. How do you change that? You can't. There is no doing away with that.
We'll get to that and more. You know, I made a mistake yesterday. I only do it about once every 6 months now. I got involved in a multi-hour discussion on Facebook.
Yeah. How'd that work out for you?
I think I have to do it once every, 4 to 6 months. And I get it out of my system, and then I'm not doing that again. Because you don't get anywhere. And it was simply, this was on a friend's post. And it was about the NFL and the whole kneeling thing. And I know that there are people, this is a group of people that exist out there for the whole NFL thing. They understand the situation. They don't want to watch and support the NFL, but they're trying to find any excuse to do it.
Yeah, pretty much.
They miss their team so much where they're trying to justify it. Well, so it wasn't even the initial post, but it was a comment that was brought up, and I'm going through it, and I'm chuckling because I know this person. I'm thinking, and this person used to be a prison guard, so is very, very pro-law enforcement. But was making, I was wondering if he was listening last night, because he was making the argument that the vast majority of the players aren't kneeling.
Right.
That if you are boycotting the NFL, you're not in support of the vast majority of the NFL players that aren't kneeling.
Right.
Was the argument that was being made. I didn't even get involved in that because, again, it isn't the number of people who's doing it. It's the policy of the NFL. And so I could have got into it, but it was the comment on it, the first comment, which was freedom of speech. You know, the players are being denied their freedom of speech, and this is a First Amendment thing, and I'm just like, geez. So that's how I started the comment. I just said, you know, and I started out with using what you've always said. If the premise is wrong, if the initial premise is wrong, everything afterwards might seem correct. But the fact is, it's all wrong, and it's all completely wrong. It's never a First Amendment issue. So finally, this, and it wasn't my friend. It was a one of his Facebook friends. Finally, when I was able to defeat the argument, he brings it back again, hit him again, and, you know, then started talking about the substance and talking about the leadership of it, which was Kaepernick and Michael Bennett. So I defeat him on every single argument, and so finally he gets down to the point where he said, well, in my opinion, they weren't really the leaders of this movement to begin with in the NFL. It's like, well, now you're denying reality, so the conversation can stop.
Well, who was?
Exactly. Well, I don't. I said, well, that's your opinion, but it is, you know, devoid of the facts. The facts are they were the leadership in it, and I went through point by point by point by point by point by point by point. Then the guy who originally wrote it, the post that my friend commented on. My friend actually didn't write the post; he just commented. He had one of the comments on it. Said to me, he just, you know, this is an hour later. He said, "Wow, you really had some great arguments there. Really, you debate very, very well." He said, "But what if you were black?" That was his argument, that it, the color of my skin. And I simply said, I have probably, and I've talked about it before, that in a few times, once as a talk show host and another as a specifically the other one as a station manager over a very, very aggressive investigative news department that was going after police corruption. I had the FBI come to my door. They came to my office door, knocked on the door and said, can we come in? Gave me their cards and said, just let you know, we hear intelligence and we're just a little bit concerned about you. If the police pull you over, please give us a call. And this was a police of a particular city. Mm-hmm. Now, we eventually, made peace with the police department, got everything that we, with the leadership of it, got everything that we wanted, had the discussion and all that. But go through that when the FBI, you talk about intimidation? The FBI comes to your door and says, the police are following you, give us a call. At that point, you understand police intimidation. Mm-hmm. And I said, so I understand it. So color of my skin wouldn't matter because I have felt it. What matters is due process and judging each and every instance of alleged police brutality or police killings with transparency and due process. That's what I look for. Nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. And we live in a day and age when everybody, you and I went through the Trayvon Martin. Everybody had their opinion, and there was a huge, 2 to 4 minute segment where nobody has any idea what happened. Right. And the fact that that does not exist means it's impossible. As even the jurors said, Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. Zimmerman might have got away with murder, but we couldn't prove it.
And he might be one of the worst guys on the planet.
It might be one of the worst, but we don't know what happened in that time span, and everybody jumped to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. That's the problem that we have.
Right.
And so, but I spent like, I don't know, on and off during the day, probably 4 hours. Mm-hmm. I do a 5-hour show. I don't need to spend 4 hours during my day doing this.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of energy anymore.
I only, like, once every 6 months. That's about it. But then, very quickly, we got a tweet yesterday that I want to respond to. And your calls and comments and everything else going on. And, just very quickly, see the Daily Wire, the Daily Caller, just listed because of the president being called a racist because he using the word dog to describe Omarosa, and they went through the dozens upon dozens of times that he has called people dogs. My problem is not that I believe the president is a racist overdoing it, because I don't, because he calls everybody every kind of name in the book. I believe he shouldn't do that. I don't believe that he, as president of the United States, should get down in the dirt to argue with somebody like Omarosa, because another week has blown where the president cannot promote his agenda that's actually working for the American public. It's different when you're in a campaign. You don't have any successes. You get down in the dirt. But once you become president of the United States and you are the leader of a party that has made advancements during your administration, every time you get down in the dirt with somebody like Omarosa that you don't need to do, You don't need to get in that way. What you do, the Democrats win every week, the public relations. And I know people will say, well, no, because he has to fight everybody. Well, if he fights everybody, then the most important thing he doesn't get to do, which is promote the success of his agenda every second, every hour, every day.
Because that's how you win.
Because that's how you win.
That's how you keep that seat.
He is no longer a candidate. He is an incumbent. He must promote the positive things that he is doing every single day, every minute of every single day, because nobody else will.
Yep.
And you can have the narrative, because the narrative all day was on the dog issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was it.
I knew it would be once I saw the tweet.
So I saw the tweet. It said, "Okay, another week blown of promoting your agenda."
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem interested in except at rallies. He doesn't seem to wish to organize the marketing of the good things that he has done as president and the things that the Republicans have done in cooperation with him to move things forward in a positive direction in this country. That's the most frustrating thing. One mm-hmm. of the most frustrating things about this president.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. I can't remember who wrote it, but the best tweet yesterday was, the economy is so great that Democrats have hundreds of thousands of dollars to give to Peter Strzok.
In fact, the total is, let's go to the tote board, $378,254 of the now $500,000 goal. It started at $150,000, then they pushed it up, then now it's...
Half a million, huh?
Yeah, yeah. That's raised by 9,809 donors. That's how many people have given. $378,254 going to his legal defense and loss of work. Now, you and I did. Nobody's made the point because they did with McCabe. Remember on the. Retirement, because he was so close to reaching a certain point in his retirement, McCabe was. But Strzok had been there 21 years. Even if you're fired, I think you still get pension. I don't know how much it would be if that is the case. I'm not sure. So, yeah, loss of work. There's a book deal. Don't tell me there's not.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's going to happen, and you're going to get a front on that book deal.
Okay, he's 48 years old.
Yeah.
So I just didn't know how old he was.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know, again, you know, what he has available to him, but the book deal, there's probably a number of publishers that would want that deal. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
We have a quasi-stationary frontal boundary extending from New England all the way to the southern plains. And on those two points, we'll see some heavy amounts of rain again for today. In the northeast, the New England coast, the mid-Atlantic, chances of thunderstorms again today. But most of that will blow out of the mid-Atlantic region and up through the northeast by tomorrow. Another area, a greater risk for flash flooding, continues to be portions of the southern plains. That area between the interstate boundaries of just east of I-35 and west of I-55, and then from I-40, Fort Smith, to Little Rock, northward to around I-70. For that region, we're looking at about 6 inches of rain over the course of the next week. Nothing in the way of rainfall for California predicted, but Nevada and Wyoming will see elevated humidity levels. Good news for fire suppression. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
And the drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Just a tweet that we got last night, and we resolved it, but I just do want to explain it because I thought it was interesting. Juan sent this to us last night. Seriously, before I go back to sleep, I guess it's easier to have a continued discussion on the previous administration's mistakes than to live in the present and defend the indefensible of the current pathetic. And that was it, and I'm assuming he meant the president. And as my response was, if you were listening to yesterday, the reason we had brought up Obama was because we were talking about the latest poll on socialism, which is a huge topic right now. It's a current topic of
and how did we get here?
Right. How do we get to this particular place? Mm-hmm. The poll showing that Democrats now favor socialism over capitalism. So we went in and had a discussion on socialism. And as I explained to him, we criticize all presidents when we disagree. Party doesn't matter. We used Obamacare as an example of creeping socialism and the lies used to defend it. And as I wrote to him, of course, you just generalized and were not specific in your criticism. And then he sent back to me and he was conciliatory. So it was OK. I mean, it was at that point, it's OK because he said he's against socialism, too. But that was the concept. The concept was not to harp on an Obama administration that's out of office. It was to look at a program and the biggest program in the last couple of years, the biggest socialist program that would have, in essence, and has regulated and taken over an enormous amount of capital.
Yeah.
And remember the definition of socialism. Is the government control of capital regulation and controlling the means of production, which leads to pure communism, which is the ownership of businesses and the elimination of private property, which is what you eventually get to.
Right.
And so in explaining socialism, we said even when you have a program, one program, which is a socialist program, the people that supported it had to lie. That was our point. Didn't matter whether it was the fact that it was Obama didn't matter. The fact that it was a socialist program with those defending it believed that they had to lie to the American public about it in order to sell it shows the dishonesty of socialism. Which then went on, as we always do, to the fact that the tearing apart the study about whether Americans really believe in socialism or whether they just it's the fact that you may have some on the top that wish to sell socialism and may truly believe in it. Others, we believe in the Democrat side, view it as just a vehicle to stay in power. But they're not promoting socialism. They're promoting free stuff.
Yeah.
They don't sell it as socialism was our point. They sell it as free stuff, and they don't talk about the objectionable part of socialism, which is the regulation of your choices and the limitation of your choices and the confiscation of your property in order to get to that. They conveniently leave that out, and you cannot have a discussion on socialism unless you complete the entire sentence. And they're not completing the entire sentence. The American public isn't completing the entire sentence, because if the American public, as we saw with Obamacare, what did they reject? Even Democrats. They love the free stuff. What did even the Democrats reject? The mandate and the taxes that go along with it.
Paying for it.
Yes. Well, the mandate and taxes that go along with it, which limited your choices, which took away the possibility of you, after being promised you would not lose your doctor or your health care plan, that lie, they had to tell that lie, because if people knew the reality of the socialist program, if Democrats knew it, then the leadership, including President Obama, who happened to be president of the United States during the push of this socialist program, they believe the Democrats would not support it. And that was our whole point, is that in order to sell socialism, you have to be dishonest. You cannot tell the truth, and that was simply an example of that.
And it, I think, is important to show recent examples because it tells you where the mindset is in our society.
Yes.
And then we brought it up, in fact, to, well, where we are right now. Well, we still want the free stuff. Not the mandate, but further proof that we want a large government to give us things. We don't want an intrusive government forcing us to do things. You can't have one without the other. Because the government still is in control. The law is still in place. It still regulates the industry. The insurance industry and the healthcare industry. So that's what drives a lot of the cost still today. And you took away one of the funding mechanisms because, well, we don't want to be forced to do something, and we also don't want to pay for it. We are delusional to the extent that, or enough people are delusional to the extent that that's exactly where we are right now on health care.
And we brought you in that the survey that was done that they didn't define socialism or capitalism. They just used the words.
Right.
And in a day and age when the majority of Americans have no idea how the government runs, they have no idea about the separation of powers. Polling shows it. 75% of Americans cannot tell you the three branches of government. If you don't know the three branches of government, you don't know their roles. You don't even understand the society that you live in. We did the survey that was done last week. The majority of Americans can't tell you all the freedoms in the First Amendment. We don't even understand the First Amendment to the United States, to the point where I got in that four-hour Facebook debate yesterday from people still 2 years later. This is how bad it is, promoting that the NFL players' First Amendment rights have been violated. Mm-hmm. We live in an absolutely clueless society. And so when you understand when these polls are done, when people say, well, people are now by the they just love socialism. No, they don't. They love the free stuff. They don't love the, they don't and will not love the reality of socialism.
Right.
They only love the one part of it, which is get the free stuff. They forget about the other part of socialism, which is the control over your life and your money and your property that it leads to. We're completely against that. Well, then you're not for socialism.
Right.
You're for the tooth fairy. You're yes. for tooth fairyism.
Yes.
You're not for socialism. What the American people like is tooth fairyism.
Yes. Santa Clausism.
Santa Clausism. But it's the truth.
That's really what it is. As if it appears out of thin air. As if it happens magically.
Right. And it's because we got into the discussion yesterday with one caller said, no, I believe that they all believe in socialism. Well, they don't.
No.
Not even the politicians selling it. They truly don't believe in it. You know, we brought up, what's his name in Venezuela?
Maduro.
Maduro, mm-hmm. Said, well, socialism isn't working, but he still wants power. Look, on the other side of it, when you look at the fact that this nation, even the people that call themselves capitalist, don't seem to be concerned about the debt in this country. Don't seem to be concerned that it's at its lowest level since I've been a talk show host of passion not to put ourselves into unsustainable debt in this country. Well, there are politicians that are calling themselves conservative and just racking up the debt, and nobody's really paying attention to it whatsoever.
Right.
It's like, we're just, you know, just conveniently ignore it. Why? Political expediency. It'll get me elected.
Mm-hmm.
And the people and more Republicans every day, well, you know, debt probably isn't going to affect me. It'll affect my children and grandchildren. Ah, to hell with them.
Right. Well, that's exactly what it is.
Let me get what I can get today.
Right.
Because
I'm not going to be here. I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
It won't be my mess to clean up. Actually, it will be your mess to clean up. You just won't be here to clean it up.
Yeah.
And that's, again, that's the delusional thought. I'm going to get mine while I can.
So that's what we're selling here. It's tooth fairyism.
Mm-hmm.
American public isn't buying into socialism. They'd reject it if they feel we saw it with Obama, and that's why we brought up Obamacare. We saw it. Get rid of the mandate. Get rid of the taxes. Give me the free stuff.
Yeah. Don't stop that over there. I just don't want to pay for it. Yeah. Keep the buffet going, but I'm not going to pay. My kids will come to the restaurant. My great-great-grandkids will come to the restaurant 70 years from now. They're going to pay you. I'm going to belly up to the buffet.
I'll gladly pay you in 2060 for a hamburger today.
Exactly.
Oh, for anybody under the age of 90 years old. That was the character Wimpy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've exaggerated it. It's an exaggerated statement from Wimpy from the Popeye cartoon.
That's right.
So, again, the whole thing of the America's buying into socialism. No, they're not. We're buying into Tooth Fairyism.
Was Popeye vegan? I guess he was.
I only saw him
eat spinach.
Yeah, just spinach. And it really you saw those muscles.
Right.
Unless the spinach contained steroids.
You know that whole thing was a ploy by the spinach industry. You know that, right?
No, I didn't.
The spinach lobbyists. They made that happen.
Big spinach?
Big spinach. It's been a problem for a long time. It's one of the problems that's listed on the concerns by Americans all the time, above climate change. Big spinach.
Big spinach.
It's in the top 10 on almost every poll, I'm pretty sure.
You think about it, if a Popeye series came out today, they probably would chart the fact of the increase in spinach consumption.
Exactly. See, I get strong by eating my spinach. Kids are watching it going, yeah, I get strong by eating a bunch of sugar in a bowl. We call it cereal while watching you eat spinach.
Well, that was the interesting thing. If we're kids growing up, especially on Saturday morning and Popeye would be on, he never convinced me to like spinach.
No.
All I cared about was the sugary commercials that came on afterwards.
Exactly. That's the sell right there.
The sugary cereal commercials.
Yeah. Pour some sugar on that spinach. Now we might have a discussion.
Who didn't from our age eat Captain Crunch to the point where it irritated the roof of your mouth?
Oh, yeah. It's Captain Crunch mouth. I think that's what they call that condition. And it's great. It's awesome.
And you lost your teeth early, and therefore the tooth fairyism that we started this whole conversation off with.
And seriously, half of the bowl of cereal stuck to your teeth.
I know.
How great is that 2 hours later on the playground?
All right. If you want to get in, I don't know why you would. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get in. Coming up following the top of the hour, we will get to some of the results in the primaries last night. Talk about now how more liberal groups are coming out against, you saw the Keith Ellison in Minnesota won his primary for attorney general. And you've got more. I just wonder how long he's going to last, because now it's not the big issue out there. I do think that it would have had more traction if the president hadn't tweeted out the dog comment yesterday, which the media just jumped on and embraced. But you're talking about the second in charge of the DNC, second in charge of the Democratic Party, and being accused of abuse, assault,
mm-hmm.
by his former girlfriend,
right?
And now more liberal groups are coming out and saying that no, this has to be seriously investigated and questioning whether he should be the candidate for attorney general.
Right.
So,
right. Because her son has spoken out.
Yes, her son started. Yes, he spoke out also.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I guess, because there in politics there can be a lot of accusations, right? And then you look for, okay, basically, what's believable or credible, you know, in any case. But when her son chimed in, you know, when he basically was, you know, I think the person who started all the accusations, then that became a little more serious because you're talking about a family member of his ex-girlfriend. So we'll see where that goes. But how long does the party hold on?
Plus, this story from CNN, unexpected effects of climate change, worse food safety, more car wrecks.
Because of climate change.
Yes. We'll get to that.
All right.
We'll get to it. We always do.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi, good morning. Well, the Manafort trial, you see that?
Yeah.
Defense rests.
We're
calling no witnesses.
We're done. What? But, you know, you and I had the discussion, I think, briefly last week when they hinted, when prosecution hinted that they were about to wrap it up. And then you ask, okay, what does the defense do? Aside from putting Paul Manafort up there, who would you put up there? So, and that wasn't going to happen. So what do you do? Well, the only thing you can do, let it go to the jury.
I know that I was reading in Politico, and they said one of the things that the Manafort defense is going to bring up is the number of people that were not witnesses for the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
And they write here, in recent days, jurors heard at length about a Chicago banker who sought a Trump administration job while loaning $16 million to Manafort, a loan officer at another bank who advised Manafort to get creative about his income to win other loans, and Manafort's former son-in-law, who joined him in what prosecutors called a fraudulent scheme to flip houses in a Los Angeles neighborhood. All those allegations came out from the prosecution. None of those men appeared in the courtroom as witnesses for the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to bring up, excuse me, all these allegations here that were made against our client, but boom. Now,
yeah, it's interesting because on the bank thing, they had a bank executive, but not the CEO. The CEO was the one that was alleged to have wanted a cabinet position. Mm-hmm. And the banking executive said, I would, if it were up to me, I wouldn't have made that $16 million loan, but the CEO approved it. But why would you not bring the CEO in as a witness? That would be my question. Because according to that banking executive, they lost over $11 million on that loan. The bank did.
Right. And they talk about the Ukrainian oligarchs, mm-hmm. who also didn't appear, who had paid him, you know, $60 million. And they talked to a former federal prosecutor who said it's a little odd that they didn't call the people who were right there in events at the heart of the prosecution's case.
Right.
And so, you know, you look at everything, you look at the bank fraud and all that. And again, I didn't pay attention to this, and it's, you know, you might have been able to get a better feel if it was on Court TV and you could watch every moment of it.
Mm-hmm.
I follow this more than I follow normal court cases and a lot of the analysis of it. And just, again, this is just off the top of my head. The best chances he has of beating the charges against him, over 30 charges,
mm-hmm.
probably would be the bank fraud. The one that I see that would be the highest hurdle would be evasion of taxes.
Right.
Because that's easy to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Well, because that one is based on that $16 million loan. How was that money actually used? Was it a loan? Was it used as any other income would be? Was it spent in a way that was designated by that loan through its application, or was it used for, you know, personal items?
And that's the one question I have is, why didn't they bring on someone, a financial expert, somebody who could analyze what Manafort did on that particular loan? Why did the only thing that they allow, you know, was the prosecution's witness and, of course, the cross-examination of that witness, but the witnesses were, you know, was an IRS agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't see anything that seemed to be where in the cross-examination they were able to make him in any way or the IRS agent look suspicious in any way.
No.
And again, it's taking liberties here, mm-hmm. because didn't...
We don't have the transcript in front of us.
Yeah, don't have the transcript in front of us. Haven't seen all the specific evidence, mm-hmm. You know, in detail, which I'm sure there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pages. Mm-hmm. So just sort of looking at it from the information I know.
I would think that for Manafort, the only avenue that you could go down is an expert. You know, a financial expert that said, okay, have you reviewed these, you know, items and is it, you know, but this may be
a tax lawyer who says, no, right. this is done all the time.
Right.
This is commonplace where you would take this particular loan and you would do this, 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 and this. As long as this didn't happen and this didn't happen, no, I would not view it as income.
And unless it's so, you know, the case is so tight with the evidence that you just couldn't compel a witness, an expert in this case. to say that.
That would be bad.
Well, I you know, because I just get the feeling that at least 10, maybe 12 charges here are going to stick. And the jury's going to see that. I could be wrong. But I suspect a number of these charges are going to come down as guilty. That'll be what the jury finds. And we'll see. You know, he's got a second trial in Washington in September. And if he's found guilty here in Virginia, I don't know if there's a deal to be made. Who knows? His attorneys had the ability to consolidate all of those charges. But they were trying to get this done, at least this part of it, in Virginia. In fact, wanted it moved to Roanoke, in hopes of getting a friendlier jury pool, basically, that because that's where the Trump support really is. But they were not successful in that. So in Washington, it's likely they're not going to get a friendly jury. So don't know how that will go.
Which brings me back to the fact that Manafort, or anybody else who is involved in making tons of money over your career, mm-hmm. by dealing with people from all over the world. All I know is, even if I didn't break any laws, the last thing I would do is go and work for any presidential campaign. Unless, you know, maybe if you're a Rex Tillerson, mm-hmm. because, all right, I was paid a salary. I mean, everything was documented because I was an employee of a company. But when you're involved in mega business deals across the world, I'm telling you, even if I believe in my heart, I have not broken a law. And I forget about that. As I told you before, I would never go work for a presidential campaign anyway. I wouldn't work for a presidential campaign. I would not serve in any presidential administration. Why? Because the chance of litigation and nobody covering my legal costs that could destroy everything that I had built up over my life, I could lose.
Mm-hmm. Just from somebody making a charge.
Just from somebody making a charge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about Michael Caputo,
mm-hmm.
who was a Trump campaign person. And as he has said, I think he even had a GoFundMe account. He said, mm-hmm. because just to appear in front of Congress, even if you've done nothing wrong, just to answer questions is $50,000.
Yeah, you have to have lawyers with you.
Right.
Don't show up without attorneys.
Right. So if so, it's 50 yeah. Just once.
Well, the whole Michael Flynn thing, because the story is that they prosecution in that case was looking to break him. Look, this will drain every dime. Your defense will drain every dime.
Right. These, for example, Michael Flynn in the positions that he was in, you know, he wasn't making $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million dollars a year.
Right.
You look at any of these people who work in the White House, what are they making? $170,000, $180,000
Maybe, yeah.
And you may say, that's great, until you're called before Congress three or four times and you have to have lawyers on retainers, some of the most expensive lawyers, and you have $180,000 a year job, and you're paying $1 million in legal fees every year.
Yes.
And you've been accused of no wrongdoing in many of these cases.
Right.
It's just you're being questioned, and therefore you need, because there are investigations maybe being done on other people. And
right.
So you're being called to testify, which means you need to get the best lawyers, and nobody's paying the freight on that. No way. The only way. I mean, that's like going to work for a company and knowing that you're at that kind of liability. I'd say, well, not unless you pay liability insurance for me.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you guarantee that you will cover any legal costs up to, I was going to say $10 million. I'm going to go higher. Seriously,
yeah, no,
$10 million wouldn't be enough.
Well, it's funny because I look at the GoFundMe account for Strzok. And it's now at $378,000 plus. And I thought to myself, that'll get you a few appearances on Capitol Hill.
Well, here's my point. Why is it a legal defense fund? What's it? Not just legal fees,
mm-hmm.
legal defense fund.
Mm-hmm.
What's he defending himself against?
Well, I wonder, again, how much of that has been, well, yeah, how much was that, his testimony,
right.
His current legal bill, and, you know, not that I care.
But his current legal bill, those lawyers, he was working for the FBI, those were FBI lawyers.
Oh, that's right,
yeah.
They were.
He wasn't paying
for
that.
He wasn't fired yet.
Yeah.
That's right.
So what does he expect is coming down the pipe?
You know, that's a really good question. I think that went through my mind yesterday as we were doing this story. And the only thing I could think of is if he had to come back and testify on Capitol Hill. I guess that's what, because when you see the picture on the GoFundMe page, it's him standing up with his right hand raised. It's him the day he was giving testimony.
Now,
one of the days
now,
he was giving testimony.
Unless he didn't trust the FBI lawyers, and one of the lawyers there, a couple of the lawyers, were his personal lawyers that he also had, and so he paid for that. But from what I know, the representation, he kept turning, and he was being advised by FBI lawyers as mm-hmm. to what to say.
Sure. Or does he suspect that it might be the case where something could come down? I mean, what have we heard from Omarosa? I expect retaliation. Well, yeah, you violated security protocol a number of times. You should expect legal retaliation. I don't know if that's going to happen, but yeah, you should expect that. Strzok, I could see him saying, he hasn't said it, but I could see him saying, I expect retaliation, or I expect they come after me, or whatever it is. So, who knows?
You mean really the opposition might attempt legal recourse?
Who thinks that way?
Well,
people who have already done it. People who know best. Takes one to know one.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, the Freightliner Team Run Smart Pros are on the road hauling freight just like you. Driver Jeff Clark tells us about his Freightliner and his role as a Team Run Smart Pro.
I've got the 2018 new Cascadia. It's got the 400 downspent engine with 1750 torque. I've got the 228 rear ends. It's got Detroit Assurance system as far as the collision mitigation system and that type of thing. I work a lot with the collision mitigation system in showing drivers how that works. To me, the collision mitigation system becomes a training tool. Remember the old Smith system where we were taught to think 7 second following distance, think out 15 seconds? If you start relating that to collision mitigation system, the idea is most collision mitigation systems don't interact until 3.5 seconds. So the goal is to get drivers to increase their following distance, out anticipate the machine, because the machine anticipates at 3.5 seconds. If you're thinking out 4.5 to 5 seconds, keeping the machine from interacting, from doing any of the haptic brake events, you'll actually start increasing your fuel mileage. And most maintenance managers will tell you the drivers who get the best fuel mileage also have the lowest maintenance costs.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley. Let's go to Rob in San Diego. Rob, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
Yeah, I was telling your call screener there. You know, it seems like a lot of these people aren't held accountable. It seems like they can get away with just about anything that was illegal in the past, you know, and then everyone's like, well, are they going to be prosecuted?
You're talking,
you know,
about Strzok,
for example.
Okay. I don't know what they might be pursuing here, but if she violated security protocol, any legal definition, and then I guess basically a federal prosecutor, the Department of Justice would pursue it. But I again don't know if they're not. I have no idea whether they are putting something together or not. Now, in terms of Peter Strzok, the whole situation could well be again in play. He was fired. Look how long it took to fire him. You know, but that doesn't mean they're not doing something. We really have no idea everything that Mueller is looking at completely. We don't.
And remember, and McCabe, for example, remember the Inspector General. Gave a few criminal referrals for the Department of Justice to look at. So we don't know that as of this point has not ended. So at that point, we don't know. As to Hillary Clinton, yeah, you have a solid point, but obviously you had a investigation that was on her side. But the American people know that.
Yes.
The best that you can look, the best that I want, I can't decide. And I can't go crazy over what a particular Justice Department decides to do. What I hope for the most is to get transparency with the American people. Remember, one of the reasons that Peter Strzok is able to raise $300,000+ for his legal defense fee is there are a significant portion of citizens of this country that are okay with FBI misconduct as long as it favors their candidate. Understand that this just isn't about the system. It's also about what the American people are willing to accept.
It seems like they're okay with everything. I mean, look at these celebrities that are threatening the president flat out in front of audiences and television cameras and everything. And in the past, they'd be in trouble in a New York second. And Madonna and all these people can seem to be able to...
Well, then your problem is with the Secret Service, who defends the president, because they're the ones that make that decision as to whether it's a legit threat or not.
Well, I always thought that you couldn't even say those things. I mean, to me, that's...
Well, no, it's whether it's...
to start a lot of things.
It's whether it is a threat or not. And if you incite a riot, there is, again, some of things that happen in cities, for example... For example, the police chief and the mayor of Portland, Oregon, have been under tremendous pressure and criticism because of the people that were blocking, you know, the ICE office.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they did not, their concern was not for public safety, but for the protesters at that point. But again, it all goes back to the people. If the people are willing to allow FBI misconduct, if the left that claims they care about police misconduct are okay with FBI misconduct, as long as it favors their particular candidate and half the country feels that way, it will be tougher to get prosecution.
Well, and that's what it comes down to. And Secret Service reportedly is looking into some things said by members of Antifa. So we'll see if that goes anywhere, if they believe that's a credible threat.
Anytime, 24 hours a day, say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. Welcome. Thanks so much for being here. I just realized I had this. Here, I wanted to read that story from CNN. On excessively hot day, here's the headline. Unexpected effects of climate change, worse food safety, more car wrecks. On excessively hot days are more likely to be fatal car accidents and food safety problems. No kidding.
Yeah.
And police officers and government food inspectors tend to do less of their duties, according to a study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology scientists who analyzed data from across the United States says that if climate change continues to change, by 2050 and another 50 years or beyond that, our world may be less safe than it is today.
Really? How?
Well, the crux of the idea, which is that weather affects how we perform our duties and how we go about our daily lives and risks that we experience. For example, the air conditioning isn't working properly here in the studio.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, it's a little hotter in here, and therefore we are not performing to our usual standard because of indoor climate change.
That's what we're going to blame it on.
Blah, 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 blah.
Hot temperatures are basically bad for human functioning.
Yes, I agree.
This is the case across a broad suite of things. By the way, very cold temperatures don't help either. Doesn't help, but I just had to say. Used incorrect grammar to make a blunt point. Yes.
Yeah.
Sleep quality, mood, mental health, risk of suicide, and work productivity are all harmed by hot temperatures. So here we go.
I've lived in Texas all of my life. Nope. I was telling my granddaughters today was their last day before going back to school. So I was making them cinnamon rolls. I told them, I said, you know, we were talking about how hot it was this summer and the whole thing, you know. I told them about staying with my grandmother one year back in the early 80s here in North Texas in a small town, and it was 118 every day for a number of days. I forget how long the stretch was. I was there only for a couple of weeks, but I mean it seemed to go on forever. I've grown up in hot temperatures. Now I will tell you this. You're going to need air conditioning. But besides that, this whole everything's going to fail because of global warming is just a load of garbage.
Ready for this one? Here we go. A similar picture emerges when researchers examine traffic accidents and policing. What you see is that fatal crash incident goes up in hot temperatures. Here, an average temperature range of 86 to 104 degrees produces an amplified risk of fatal car crashes of a half a percentage point. If it goes up in particularly cold, it also goes up in particularly cold temperatures, but not as sharp as an increase as in hot temperatures. So people are more likely to have a fatal crash in hot temperatures, but also the probability of traffic stops. The number of traffic stops that are conducted in a county in a given day when it is hot goes down. I'm telling you one thing right now. Again, just looking at temperature, I don't know what other things it might relate to about, you know, what, you know, law enforcement, what other things that they may have to deal with. We know that in some cities, the rate of crime goes up in the summertime.
Yeah.
Because actually it's easier to be out committing crimes in the summer than it is when you have 5 feet of snow.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you one thing, that is completely untrue in my town.
In terms of traffic stops. Yeah.
Just go down the main thoroughfare from where my subdivision to get to the interstate or the tollway. I can't tell you how many times that it's like a 4 mile stretch, and I'll see 3, 4, 5 people pulled over.
I wonder about the methodology here in this study.
Yes.
Per miles driven is what you would measure.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point.
Because it stands to reason that you would drive fewer miles in the winter, especially in an area where there's something like, you know, you've got heavy winter.
Yes,
conditions.
You do. Yeah, you do.
Know, you stay home a lot more often. So per mile driven is what I'd like to see. And maybe they use that methodology. But this entire cell on, you know, look at what you're doing. You're to blame for all of this.
It's just stupid.
Global warming crap.
Well, they're pretending that they care.
Well, they want to add some science to it. Okay, let's break down the science. I've seen a number of groups over the years that have taken data and basically morphed it into something they were trying to get behind. They use something, and then we did this, you know, a number of years ago. You break down the actual data and what it actually tells you in that study. You had a group petitioning Congress to create new laws based on this. Nope. Because that's the problem with it, is that it's being done as a result of an agenda. That agenda often leads to, well, here's what we've got to do to keep this from happening. No, that's not going to save you any more than buying carbon credits will. It's ridiculous behavior. And this is why it doesn't resonate with the American people, because the American people get it. You know, you can try and throw money like the Obama administration did at companies. You know, they all these green jobs. Well, a lot of those jobs were already in place. They were getting more federal money because now we classified them differently. Well, no. Absolutely not. Insulation or whatever it is. These companies were look, sell me on the product. Let the makers of the product and the companies who sell it tell me how it's going to benefit me. The government stays out of it. But no, we insisted on giving green companies money. And time after time, you had what? These failing companies getting government money. Nope. Nope. And nope.
Well, as we have said overall, when you look at, you know, where you would wish the planet to be, you would actually want a little bit warmer temperatures and colder temperatures.
Yeah.
Because of food production.
Right.
Itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing is what? Food.
Well, and there's the other part of it, is that if we're going to have this discussion, why is it that it's one-sided And the scientific community that says, no, the data is flawed, is ignored. They refuse to have the debate. Don't have it between the political parties. Have it between the scientists. Yep. But they refuse to do that.
When was the last time you saw a climate? You and I have often said that's what should be done. Take the politicians out of it. Take the talk show host out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the scientists who say yes and the scientists who say no. You have a panel discussion on it.
Yep.
I should have seen that on the Science Channel. I should have seen that debate on National Geographic.
It should be an ongoing discussion, because if the world is really ending, we kind of need to know that for real, and we need to know what's actually causing it and how to prepare for it.
And every time you hear, well, no, it's not worthwhile of debate because the consensus is in, then you know the consensus is not in.
Right.
Because it is human nature that when you know you can win an argument, you wish to always have that debate. You don't wish to have the debate. This is human nature. When you know you can't win that debate.
Yep. When everything you bring to the table is going to be broken down and shredded, last thing you're going to do is show up.
Yeah, all the science backs me and everything else, but no, I won't have the debate because I'm sure of my position. Oh, really? That's what science has become now, huh?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm absolutely sure of my position, which is the reason I won't have the debate. No, if you can blow somebody out of the water, human nature dictates you want to blow them out of the water.
I remember the CNN reporter, Miles O'Brien. And I remember watching him basically dismiss it as the left has done. Well, the consensus is in. No one's even debating it. You're right. No one's debating it because the one side that's making the charge is not willing to defend it.
Oh, this just in. The Buffalo Bills are not going to play any games this year because, look, the consensus is in. They can win every one.
Mm-hmm. No need to show up.
No,
they don't have
to show
prove
up.
It. We already know that.
Maybe that was unfair. Maybe I should have substituted the Cleveland Browns. They didn't win a game last year.
Ah.
By the way, I did make a big deal to my Cleveland Browns friends because they won the preseason game last week. I said, saw them win the preseason game. They won all their preseason games last year, then went 0-16. I said, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have a point.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry for bringing that
up. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I'll shut up. I haven't been paying attention much to football. Sorry.
Have a good day.
Never mind.
What I meant was nothing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, but, that's funny with football, NBC, with Bob Costas shutting down the lights at halftime. The most ridiculous display ever.
The climate change. Remember when they did that?
Yeah.
And we said, as we said at the time, and we never got a response from the NFL, but if you truly care about climate change and lights, have all afternoon games.
Right.
Stop the night games. The only reason you have night games is you believe you can make more money off a night game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the earth is at peril, well, then it's just a game. Don't do it. They never responded to us on that.
Right. You're not doing everything you can.
Well, we'll destroy the planet as long as we make more money in our games.
Right.
Well, you know something? I disagree. I'm going to protest, and now I'm going to kneel during the national anthem because of your climate change position.
Well, you know, you had Sheryl Crow and Lori David going around the country wagging their finger at everybody how horrible your state is when it comes to climate change. On a tour bus, two of them.
Yes.
A tour bus powered by diesel.
Wasn't Sheryl Crow who talked about just using
the one square?
One square.
Yeah.
Of
and then
paper.
She had to come back and say, oh, I was only joking. Sure you were. But that's, I asked the question then. Well, wait a minute. You should be driving a Prius, right?
Right.
At least act like you care. Leonardo, he drives a Prius. I mean, on the ground, it's a Prius. In the air, it's a private jet.
Oh, I'm going to say, he's got a Prius yacht?
Yeah, exactly. $400 million yacht. He's out cruising. Oh, it's a sailboat, is it? Yeah.
I'm using the accelerated wind because of climate change for my benefit on my sailboat.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a sailboat,
though. Even Al Gore the other day had to come out and say, yeah, you know, on the whole climate change thing so far, Trump's not as bad as I thought he was going to be. Ooh, that's not going to work for Al Gore. You're going to be shamed now. Dude, you said the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You said the wrong thing about the wrong person.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll get to your calls and comments, Andrew, Emily, and more following the top of the hour on a variety of different topics out there, because we cover a variety of different topics on the show, everything from people still wanting to comment from the survey yesterday on socialism, plus what's going on in Washington, D.C., the investigations, Omarosa, and more. So your calls and comments all coming up. Plus, we'll tell you about the woman who was arrested at the extremist Muslim compound, moved to federal custody, and we'll tell you why on that, and some of the results of some of the interesting stories. Nothing really shocking in any of the results, really, on the primaries yesterday.
Right.
But the latest on that, and also second in charge of the Democrat Party, the DNC, Keith Ellison, charges now, the allegations of abuse of his former girlfriend, getting more notice from liberal groups out there who seem to be getting outraged on it. And he won his primary for attorney general in Minnesota. So that, more on the way, plus your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, lines open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. We're Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Thanks for being here. The Sierra Club tossed its support behind the women accusing Representative Keith Ellison of physical assault as the Democratic lawmaker won his primary battle in his campaign for attorney general in Minnesota. Quote, we are deeply troubled and disturbed by our colleague Carol Monahan's descriptions of abuse by Keith Ellison, the Sierra Club president wrote in a press statement on Tuesday, referring to activist Karen Monahan's accusations against the Democrat. Reports that Ellison physically assaulted and psychologically abused Monahan sprang up after her son claimed in an August 12 Facebook post that he has evidence of the attacks. This is from the Daily Caller.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should have high expectations for those in office and everywhere to live and work with integrity, respect, and accountability, said the Sierra Club. Karen is our colleague, our friend. She works for the group on anti-coal initiatives. Karen is our colleague, our friend, and our partner in fighting for a more equitable, inclusive, and just world. And she, her son, and her family deserve to be treated with respect. Other liberal activist groups are demanding Ellison resign from Congress and end his attorney general campaign following the allegations. We believe women. We believe Karen Monahan. Ultraviolet executive director Shauna Thomas said in a statement on Monday, a domestic abuser does not belong in any position of power, but particularly not as a top prosecutor in the state. the Democratic National Committee, where he is second in charge, is largely ignoring the controversy. The DNC declined repeated requests for comments from the Daily Caller, as well as requests from the Wall Street Journal, Huffington Post, and CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Ellison is the DNC's deputy chair.
Yeah. I don't know any way around this for him politically. I just, because it's one thing to get a call from right-leaning newspapers and, you know, the DNC not responding, but when you start getting calls from Huffington Post and others on, you know, that lean left, you can expect that that pressure is going to keep building and building and building until...
And it did, because there's an update to the story.
Yeah.
I just found an update. The DNC is now reviewing domestic abuse allegations against Minnesota Representative and Deputy DNC Chairman Keith Ellison. The DNC should have suspended Ellison at a minimum, according to a former DNC communications director. This, again, from the Daily Caller.
Mm.
These allegations recently came to light. We were reviewing them. All allegations of domestic abuse are disturbing and should be taken seriously. The DNC's statement did not go far enough, according to former DNC communications director Luis Mirandez. The party has no choice but to suspend him at a minimum until they figure out what's going on, Miranda told NPR. Frankly, it would be malpractice not to. We've made it clear we're going to take these accusations seriously. At a minimum, we set too high a standard not to take this seriously.
Mm-hmm.
The NPR story went live just hours before the polls closed in the Minnesota primaries, where Ellison easily won the Democratic nomination for attorney general. Ellison's ex-girlfriend, Sierra Club activist Karen Monahan, has accused him of physically and verbally abusing her during their relationship. Monahan says she has a video of Ellison dragging her off a bed and yelling expletives at her. Although she has yet to produce that video, Ellison has denied her accusations and claims the video evidence does not exist. Monahan's son, Austin, first aired the allegations against Ellison on Saturday and claimed to have witnessed the alleged video of Ellison's abuse. I was, quote, I was using my mom's computer trying to download something, and I clicked on a file. I found over 100 text and Twitter's messages and video, almost 2 minutes long, that showed Keith Ellison dragging my mama off the bed by her feet, screaming and calling her a blanky blank.
Mm.
And telling her to get the blank out of his house, Austin wrote in a viral Facebook post, sitting all this time watching what our mom went through and not being able to say or do anything was hard as hell. None of you know the hell our family has gone through. I don't think half of you would even care. Quote, we watched her so-called political friends stand by and say or do nothing. People had an idea what happened and never reached out to my mom. The same people who are posting about social justice are ready to smear my mom and protect a person who abused her and broke the law, end of quote. And that's what got the whole thing started, and now she has also come out and said, you know, what her son has claimed is also true, and that she does have a video on this. You know, this is the kind of thing that you would assume in the next couple of weeks, way before the election,
mm-hmm.
where more evidence comes out, and he's either going to have to, resign or stay in it. We saw what happened to Chris Collins,
mm-hmm.
The Republican congressman, when now Ellison has not been charged with anything.
No,
charges. Where Chris Collins, a Republican congressman, my parents' congressman, by the way, in New York, out of Clarence, New York, was hit with insider trading.
Mm-hmm.
And he initially said that he was going to continue his campaign. And you and I both said that night. I mean, just from the charges the charges against him and the video that exists that the media got a hold of Chris Collins. I don't know what he's saying on the phone. I don't know. I don't have a timestamp of it, so I don't know. But at that moment, I think anybody who has any political sense whatsoever, when that video came out, said, doesn't matter whether you're guilty or not, you got to get out of this.
Yeah.
You've got to suspend your campaign. You've got to get out because you cannot run for that seat with this in the backdrop.
Right.
Because this is about corruption. Now, the Wall Street Journal did an editorial yesterday and said, basically making the point that they question the motivation of the federal prosecutor coming out now within 90 days of the election and not doing it before the primary to begin with, basically stating, I mean, their question is, we sense this may be political.
Mm-hmm. The timing
may be political because this happened in June of 17, and they said this happened in June of 2017. You could have had if it was that crystal clear, you could easily have filed the charges before the Republican primary was held to which he won at that particular point, so he could resign beforehand. And the Wall Street Journal goes on to talk about attorney generals, including Eric Holder, that said in 2008, 2012, 2016, you know, the policy of the Justice Department is not to affect the outcome of the election. In essence, if you don't have the ability to prosecute somebody, or you don't believe you fully have it, or you get it close to an election, you wait till after the election.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's Hillary, and then you never
right, do. Right. You don't affect the outcome of an election. So they're questioning the timing on it. And how do you know? Because who knows when the prosecution got the evidence against, you know, Chris Collins of New York.
Right.
Who knows?
But the idea would be to give the people of that district a chance to pick someone else to be on the ballot. You know, if indeed it was crystal clear and they had that evidence at that time. But again, we don't know. We don't know when they got the evidence.
So, this is a case, and when you look at Ellison here, where either he has to come up with an extremely strong defense and say, produce your evidence now.
Mm-hmm. He basically is going to have to do that. Produce the evidence. It didn't happen. It doesn't exist. And it doesn't exist because it didn't happen. So, you know, if you're challenging your accuser here, you're going to have to do it in a really big and bold way if you're indeed innocent. If not, and that doesn't happen, but even worse, the evidence does come out against him. I mean, that's going to be clear.
Well,
that right there, if there is a video that exists, there's not going to be any two questions about it.
Well, you see what's happening here, though, is tick, 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 tick. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the Sierra Club come out. You know,
yeah.
They're a leftist group.
Right.
Then you have the other group come out. Mm-hmm. Now the DNC is investigating. And as this continues, you're going to have more groups come out. And the pressure just keeps ramping up at that point for Ellison to resign, especially not just because he'd be running for attorney general of Minnesota. But just the fact that he's second in charge of the DNC, he's a deputy chair of the DNC.
Right.
And you're going into the midterms.
Yep.
And if the allegations really get seriously, they're serious, you know, and more evidence comes out and you don't resign, this is something that the Republicans can use against the Democrat Party in general.
Well, and when the allegations came from her son, his ex-girlfriend's son, people put a lot of weight into that. Because they ask herself, in any given situation, if there's a bad breakup, it is possible that even a family member could look to, you know, throw dirt, especially politically, in this case, at somebody they believe is a bad person or whatever it is. But if you look at the nature of it, and that's all we have to go on so far, unless that video is presented, you know, to the people, then I, you know, that's, there's a lot of weight that's put into that. Simply put, I just don't know where the DNC, if you're looking at the party, Keith Ellison, while he's in, you know, that deputy chair position, likely isn't the future on the national level of the party. I'm guessing the DNC will part ways. And they will suspend him as deputy chair. Because I don't know that they have another choice. If this continues to build, and again, you just quoted story from NPR. So you got NPR, you've got Huffington Post. Again, not right-leaning, while the Wall Street Journal is also asking for the DNC to comment on it. This is not some one-sided concern issued by the media and questions by the media.
And remember, when Ellison was running in 2005, another woman accused him.
Mm-hmm.
His another, she claimed, alleged ex-girlfriend accused him of grabbing and threatening her. She mm-hmm. claimed that she had a romantic relationship with Ellison back in the 1990s mm-hmm. while Ellison was married. I succumbed to his romantic advances. In retrospect, it was one of the greatest mistakes of my life. Our heart and cold romance developed into a love-hate showdown by the spring of 1994.
Right.
He belittled me about my weight and constantly criticized my every word and action. He ostracized me from the community. She wrote in an op-ed piece for the Wright County Republican.
Mm.
Alexander said Ellison allegedly went to her house, grabbed her, verbally abused her, and threatened her back in 2005. Ellison didn't just refute the allegations. He denied ever having a relationship with her. He was running for Minnesota's 5th District congressional seat in 2005 when he filed a restraining order against her as a culmination of the frustration of the blackmail scheme and her longstanding efforts to damage him.
Hmm.
Ellison accused both Alexander and a freelance writer of blackmail. A year later, she filed a counter-restraining order, although that was dismissed. So, again, you know, whether true or not, it's the fact that the history exists there, and then the suspicion as you go into this, especially as the calls, and I don't remember back then that there were calls for his resignation, but then again, he was not the powerhouse back then.
Mm-hmm.
As he is today, and he's a political powerhouse in Minnesota and in the Democrat Party. He's the deputy chair of the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see where this goes, but at the moment, I sense tick, tick, tick.
Well, it goes. You know, it's a lot like the Roy Moore case. You know, if there's no evidence, you know, or until there's evidence, you basically have to go by the accounts of individuals, again, going back to the son of the former girlfriend and all of that, and people politically, that's how they put their, you know, where they put their beliefs, who's believable in this equation and who's not. And in the post hashtag Me Too era, there are a number of organizations that aren't going to accept it, even if the evidence is never seen. If the video exists and someone sees it, even if the public doesn't see it, but someone else besides the son sees it and says, yeah, that happened, then obviously it's over. It's pretty cut and dry. But in a situation like this, it's going to be about what people believe and also about whether or not they want something like this, a cloud hanging over their head. Again, as you point out, it's not just the AG's office in Minnesota. It's the DNC. It's the party.
And another thing too, especially with the Al Franken resigning
right
in Minnesota, mm-hmm. that adds to the sensitivity of that topic
yeah.
in the state of Minnesota
right.
with Democrats.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
AM It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, the woman arrested at the extremist Muslim New Mexico compound is moved into federal custody. We'll tell you why coming up and the situation that was going on there. Still just an unbelievable story. A lot of criticism of the judge releasing them on bail, even though nobody yet is out. Everybody is still in, and the main suspect also is still in custody because he has a warrant out for him from Georgia.
Right.
And we'll give you the specifics on that. But also your calls and comments, Andrew, Emily, and Tom. People have been waiting patiently, so we'll get your calls and comments. Everything from our socialism discussion that we had from the poll to what's going on in Washington, D.C., the investigations, you know, Mueller and Strzok and all that. And
didn't see much movement on the comments from Giuliani before last.
No.
But it never moves in one day, does it? It always takes a while for things to get moving. For VDO Roadlog, here is your forecast.
It's been a dangerous situation overnight in areas of Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania, where flash flooding warnings and watches have gone out through the evening. 200 homes damaged in New Jersey. The city of New York was under a flood watch for a time. Floods on the East Coast continue to put many lives in danger because now we have rising creeks and streams. Now, we'll get a break in the rain for the region today, but I do see more rain in the forecast for Friday and Saturday. Overnight, we saw heavy amounts of rain in New Jersey. And again, the big problem now, even though the rains have subsided, are these creeks, rivers, and streams will be rising throughout the day. So if you have friends, family, interests in the area, or will be traveling to the Northeast, especially on some of the back and state roads, you may just, in fact, find some road closures. With a focus on the Northeast, your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Join Gary and Eric in the Octagon now. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Let's head to you. We go to Emily in Houston about, all the investigations going on in D.C. Emily, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks for bringing up the issue of legal abuse. You did it in the last segment with Keith Ellison, the whole thing about abusing it for political purposes, and you silence the victims of these things until it becomes convenient. And then in the previous segment that I was calling about, you were talking about how the legal process is abused to bleed people dry for political gain. And even combinations of these, like previously Obama passed an unconstitutional ACA for both political and financial manipulations until we can go through the whole process to straighten it out. He put pressure on people to fix it, and it's at taxpayers' expense. So what I'd like to see happen is constitutionalists like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul organize a class action lawsuit, and all the taxpayers start suing every time government power is abused to do this at our expense. We start collecting on it.
So never going to happen.
Obama and never, Pelosi.
I understand. You know? I understand morally what you're saying, and I don't disagree with you morally. Legally, that's never going to happen.
Well, as Christians, the Bible says when two or three agree, then we establish, you know, the goodwill, what
fine,
God's will
fine,
is,
that's,
and that prevails. So I think we can at least make a statement.
I agree with you, but if
policing,
right, but if you end up suing the government defends itself with your taxpayer dollars to begin with.
Well, I mean, you can set up grand juries that the people do the work, and it, there's ways to do it where you're kind of outside the system where we maintain control.
It's never going to happen. You're not, because the example you gave
we
was.
Have a federal, Federal Reserve system. We can get credit.
Look, you're changing topics. Look, you're changing topics. I don't want to go too quickly here. Let's stick on one topic. You used you used as an example the ACA. That was a law passed by Congress. Congress gave the executive. even if it doesn't matter whether it was all Democrats, Congress passed it. The Congress gave the executive branch a ton of leeway to make all different types of rulings. Rulings are made all the time by politicians that are found unconstitutional by the court. All that costs money to do so. There's no way that anybody in Washington, D.C. or in Congress is going to pass a law that will state that any mistake made by a politician or a judge will come out of their own pocket. That will never happen.
Well, what we can do is, what I was saying about the Federal Reserve is, we add up the cost, and instead of charging it to taxpayers, once we resolve the issue, then we can go through and charge the credits like a credit card tab. If we dispute the charges, we are not liable for those charges while the dispute is going on, and we can hold the wrongdoers responsible.
Emily, with all due Emily, look, I understand where you're coming from morally, but to be blunt, you're living in a dream world.
I'm willing to make a bet with you. We can win this war if we stand together.
I'm
willing to bet you that we can get together with Ted Cruz and Ray Palmer serious.
I understand where you're coming from, and this isn't about winning the war. This is about how you do it, and you're not going to be able to do it the ways that you have just initiated. It doesn't matter whether you have Ted Cruz and Rand Paul even behind you. That means at that point you have two senators.
Look at everything right now with that's going against the current president. And basically you have two lawmakers right now on Capitol Hill. There are others, but the most vocal, Trey Gowdy, Devin Nunes. Now, it happens to be because of their positions on their respective committees. But tell me, where is the outrage for a special prosecutor that's been assigned to no crime? That's unprecedented, and it was clearly politically driven. We know this. We've got documentation of it. We know it. The associate deputy attorney general's wife worked for the company that hired a foreign national to get bogus information from the Russians. None of that is disputed. It points in one direction. Not one crime has been identified. I mean identified. This happened on this date. This happened on this date. Not one crime has been identified in relation to the Trump campaign, anyone associated with the campaign, the Russians, and the election. That would be your collusion right there. Nope. You got Manafort on charges from years ago. If he broke the law, then he should answer to that. If they show that and that's how the jury decides this week or whenever that's going to be, then that's that case. But that has nothing to do with the election. So what you're talking about, and Emily, we can hear your passion here, but what you're wanting is something that's never going to happen. What you're wanting is a perfect world where everyone is going to be held accountable for a number of things. So imagine the entire long list of lawsuits that you would have. There's just no way to get there. You are building, you know, a mountain that no one would ever climb.
And the other thing is, don't make the mistake of believing that 100% of the people in this country would back what you are proposing. Eric and I have spent the last day talking about the fact of the lawlessness that exists in the left.
Mm-hmm.
The lawlessness that you see, the promotion of lawlessness with Peter Strzok.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Strzok violated policies of the FBI. He is now being rewarded with hundreds of thousands of dollars from his supporters for being a bad FBI agent. But he was a bad FBI agent in support of their candidate, So him not following the policies is okay. Hillary Clinton was never prosecuted because you had, even though we knew the specific law she broke, she was never even charged. Why? Because of the support that she had within law enforcement and also the support that she has from half the country. The political will from half the country was not to do it. We have the majority of the country that doesn't understand the separation of powers. Mm. Don't even understand why our government works the way that it does. They don't care to know about how the government works. They want what they want, and they want it now. Your mistake is not that it's the government versus us. It is the mindset of a significant portion of Americans that do believe in lawlessness as long as it fits their position and their candidate.
Because
they also don't believe in the Constitution if it doesn't fit their particular day-to-day issues or their candidate.
They only have their Constitution. The Constitution, according to me, I can pick and choose, and that's exactly the way they do it. But, Emily, what you describe is political will. Well, there are a couple of things. I would much rather have Hillary Clinton not be the president than have her sitting in jail. If given those two choices.
Right.
Now, should she pay for her crime? Yes, I do believe that. And she did in November of 2016. She paid for being a wholly dishonest person. And it wasn't just about the email server. It goes back to Benghazi. It goes back to a number of things over the years that led up to her not becoming president. And I would much rather, if, again, that was the binary decision, then that's the choice that that I would make. And that's what it comes down to with any level of political will. You talk about Ted Cruz. You talk about, you know, Trey Gowdy and a number of individuals up there on Capitol Hill, but how many real conservatives, real constitutionalists are there on Capitol Hill? And I mean the ones that truly respect the Constitution. How many are there? Well, in terms of conservatives, it's relatively few. It's in the dozens. There's your political will. You have people screaming, no borders. Cory Booker holding up the sign, no borders. That's the left. No laws. We shouldn't have a presidency now, according to one leftist. We shouldn't have a presidency because my person, my choice didn't win.
You have a Democrat Party that the rank and file don't support their party on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most important issues to them. They keep voting them in.
Yep.
You have a party that the rank and file, I mean the voters, that don't support sanctuary cities. By and far, their party does. They keep voting for them.
Yep.
So, you know, your belief that it can change because it's the people versus the government, and as long as the people want it, we can get anything we want from government, you're making the mistake that the majority have the political will to do what you... And by the way, I agree with you. I wish it would go that way, but I have to, I have to be a realist and understand where the political will is and where the political will is not. And you're never going to have the political will in the scenarios that you even threw us as to how to change things. I don't believe they're even possible to happen. Where grand juries would make all the decisions. Well, the prosecutor has to appoint the grand jury.
Right.
Which prosecutor's going to do that? These things just don't magically happen.
Well, because you're saying it is this, I guess, idea that there would be nothing political behind it, and it would be purely lawful. There's always something political behind it. Because there are always going to have to be humans involved in that process.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio. It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Let's go to Tom in Spring Valley, California, about Keith Ellison, the second in charge of the DNC and the allegations of abuse against him. Hi, Tom. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome.
Hi, Gary and Eric.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you guys something that with his, even though he was only accused and not charged in 2005, it sets up a pattern. And that pattern can lead to being a felony. And I say that because unfortunately, fortunately, they caught me finally in 2007. I went to jail for a day. But what happened was it would have been a felony for me too, unless I'd have pled guilty to a lesser charge, but I still had to go through a year's worth of anger management, 3 years worth of probation, and I lost my ability to use, have a weapon or anything for 10 years.
Well, again, with Keith Ellison here, an accusation doesn't change, an accusation would not change the sentence if you were found guilty of this particular crime. It might show a pattern which could be used or not be used by a potential prosecutor, but the fact is, in all likelihood, it's not going to change the evidence portion of it.
Right. And we don't know of any legal charges even pending or an investigation as of yet on the Ellison situation, to be clear. That has not moved to that.
Right. Nothing. Just allegations.
It's about whether the party wants to maintain their relationship and have him as the second in command.
Right. To try to figure out what would happen in a court case when we don't even know the information here is going way too far at this moment.
Yes.
So, and as for personally what you have gone through, we don't know who you are, so we don't really take personal stories on things like that. But we do appreciate your call on that. Also coming up following the top of the hour, the grand jury report about priests and abuse from the grand jury in the Diocese of Pittsburgh and the other, I think, a couple of other dioceses out there.
Yeah, a total of six in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Yeah.
The accusations of what the priests did, horrifying.
Yes. Going back decades.
The cover-up. Yeah, right. Was it 7 decades?
7 decades.
The cover-up?
Mm. Well, this is the problem. That's basically what this report shows is that, the report alleges, I guess, against the church that they were covering it up at all costs. You protect the church at all costs. We'll get into that after the top of the hour.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.